Fantastic. Thank you very much. Okay, so can you guess what I'm going to speak about this morning? Okay, you might be surprised, actually. So I thought I would pop this quote up to begin with, which you may have heard before. It says, God could not be everywhere, and therefore he made mothers. Now, that's attributed to Rudyard Kipling, but it seems likely that he was just paraphrasing a Jewish proverb. So I need to point out that it's heresy, but I think you understand the kind of sentiment of it, yeah? God could not be everywhere, and so he made mothers. And I know we've got some friends visiting from America today, haven't we? And Americans use a phrase that has kind of transferred over the pond as well. And so they talk about motherhood and apple pie, don't they? And that idea of motherhood and apple pie kind of sums up things that everyone agrees inarguably good. You know, it's like motherhood and apple pie. No one's going to fight you over it. No one's going to disagree with you. Everyone agrees that they are good things. Okay. Now, not all of you are going to like this next bit. So I just give you that heads up. You can always go and get a cup of coffee or something. One of the reasons that we sometimes do cafe style is because it means that you don't necessarily have to listen to someone speaking up the front for the whole time, but you can actually engage in some conversation where you are and talk to the people that are sat near you and that kind of thing. I'm only going to ask you to do this morning, just to be nice and gentle. But I want you to have a look at a question that's going to come up on the screen, and then just spend 2 minutes, probably no more than that, just chatting to the people on your table, just seeing what ideas you come up with. And then I will ask for a bit of feedback in a minute, just to make sure you're talking about that and not talking about Liverpool playing Spurs this afternoon or whatever it might be. So the question that I want you to think about and to come up with some ideas for is, what are the qualities of a good mother? So when you picture a good mother, when you imagine a good mother, what are the kinds of things, the characteristics, the qualities that a good mother has? So if you don't want to do this, go and get a drink. If you do, have a conversation on your tables. What are the qualities of a good mother? Thank you for doing that. So I notice actually that some of you are sitting with your mothers. So I don't know whether that makes it easier or harder. Okay. Now, I'm not going to pick on anybody, but does anybody want to share any of your thoughts? Perhaps maybe just one per table or something like that. Kate, what was one of the qualities you came up with?
Well, we said unconditional love, which obviously includes praying with your children a lot, but we believe that positive reinforcement of correction is critical.
Ooh. Okay, so unconditional love, which it would include praying with your children, did you say?
Or... Yeah, but I was just trying to squeeze.
No, that's all right. But you said correction?
Yeah,
and
positive.
And positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Fantastic. Anybody else want to add to that? Daniela.
So,
one of the good qualities of a good mother is that they are there for you.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Anybody else want to share anything that you were thinking about in terms of qualities of a good mother?
Kindness.
Pardon me?
Kindness.
Kindness, yeah, absolutely. So kindness. Anyone want to add to the qualities that we've been thinking about?
Patience.
Loving. Okay, so loving, patient. Henry?
Slow to anger, abounding in love.
Slow to anger, abounding in love. Okay. Brilliant. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's super. Thank you very much for engaging with that and for the suggestions that you came back with. That's really helpful. So we can't get away from the fact that in the Bible, God is described using male pronouns. So he is he, him, his. He is described using that kind of language. But also, as Paul has spoken to us about in the not-too-distant past, in order to fully express his likeness, God had to create both male and female. You know, in order to express fully who God is, he had to create both male and female. And that comes right in the first chapter of the Bible. So you'll know this, but Genesis 1:27 says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. And I don't know much about this guy, but someone called Bruce Howell, who is a preacher and a pastor, has said God combines in himself all the virtues of a perfect character. And I want to suggest to you this morning that that includes all the virtues of a perfect mother. And that's what I want to be thinking about a bit this morning. So this verse from Isaiah is really striking. This is Isaiah 49:15. It says, can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? And I think probably most people would answer that question no. They would think that's a rhetorical question, a question that doesn't require an answer. But God goes on, though she may forget, I will not forget you. So that just tells us there, in Isaiah, that God's love is greater than the love, even of the best earthly mother, even of the most perfect mother, even though she might forget, God will not. God will remember. Okay, so we're going to get into sort of the meat of what I want us to think about this morning. And thinking of meat, I don't know what you're like when you have a meal. Maybe your mum makes something for you or whatever, and there's something on your plate that you don't like. All right? So it seems to me that there are a number of approaches to that. I mean, obviously you can be rude and leave it, but some of us have been brought up to sort of clear our plates. That was one of the things that my mother taught me. And so it seems to me that there's a couple of strategies, maybe three strategies that you can use where you've got things on your plate that you don't want. Okay? I think what some people do is they eat them first. Yeah, get them out of the way, and then you can eat the other things that you enjoy, and you're left with that taste in your mouth, you know, the things that you like. I think other people, and perhaps at least one of my daughters, I won't tell you which one, is probably in this camp, and that would be to eat all the nice things first, and then to leave the less nice thing until last. And then I think probably what Stephanie would be to sort of mix it all up. So that, you know, you eat a little bit of the nasty thing with the nice things, and that sort of counteracts the taste or whatever. Okay. And the reason that I mention that is because I'm going to look this morning at three mother-like qualities of God. Three mother-like qualities of God. But I want to start with the one that I think is hardest to swallow. Okay? Because we're going to think about discipline, comfort, and protection. And so I'm very grateful to Kate's table, who talked about that idea of correction and positive reinforcement. So we're going to think about discipline, comfort, and protection. And when I started to think about discipline and look to see what material was out there, I didn't really find very much, which I find interesting in itself. And it's kind of whetted my appetite. I'm not going to go into it in huge detail this morning, but at some point I'd be quite interested to look more at this idea of the way in which God disciplines us and to sort of think more about that. Some of you will recognise this image. And so that's from a cartoon called Wait Till Your Father Gets Home. Yeah? I don't know if it's because I'm kind of musical, but I remember the song. Do you remember the song? Yeah, okay, some people nodding at me. And so although there was this show called Wait Till Your Father Gets Home, I don't know what it was like in your house, but in my house, when I was growing up, I should make that clear, in the home that I grew up in, I think it tended to be my mum, actually, that did the disciplining. You know, a bit like Theo was saying to us this morning. I think it tended to be my mum that did the discipline. And I just want to share a quick example of that to you. So I can remember, and I remember it quite vividly, playing football in our lounge at home, okay, with a friend. I can't remember who that friend was, but I remember we were playing football. And obviously that was something we'd been told not to do. And even now I feel really bad about it because I can see my mum and dad's house has got a window out onto their back garden. And in front of that window, my mum had this beautiful like really white vase. I'm not quite sure what it was made of, whether it was porcelain or bone china or whatever, but it was sort of a lovely shape, and it had sort of like a leaf effect, and it was a brilliant, it was really white. Do you know what it, that kind of pottery that you see? And so you know what happened. We're playing football in the lounge, and the football hits this vase and just smashes it into 1,000 pieces beyond repair. So being the brave soul that I am, I fled the scene. So me and my mate realised what had happened and legged it. And I think we must have been gone for some while. I don't quite know where I'd gone. But obviously, eventually, I had to go back home. And I did go back and see my mum. And do you know, I can't actually remember what the punishment was. I think that partly I knew how upset she would be. And so by the time I got home, I was genuinely sorry for what had happened. And I think my mum took that into account when she disciplined me and, you know, punished me for that vase being broken. So I want us to think a little bit this morning about that whole idea of discipline, that mother-like quality of God, if you like, of discipline. And so if you've got your Bibles, this is the longest passage that we're going to read this morning. We're going to read from Hebrews, and we're going to read from Hebrews chapter 12, and beginning at verse 4. So if you want to look that up, that would be super. That's Hebrews chapter 12, starting at verse 4. And I'm reading from the NIV, and it says this. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And you have forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. So, fantastic verses. A lot that we could say about it. And I think I'm becoming more and more like Paul. Haven't got time to say everything I would like to say about that this morning, but just to pull out a few points in terms of us thinking about these mother-like qualities of God. Just to give you some context, the Christians which Hebrews was written to were experiencing hardships because of their faith. So because they were Christians, they were experiencing hardship. And some examples of that might have been they were being insulted, they were being persecuted, their property was being confiscated, they were being put into prison. And that's why Paul says to them, and this might not seem especially encouraging, but that's why Paul says to them, you've not, you know, resisted yet to the point of shedding blood. So in verse 4, he's reminding them that although these hardships are besetting them, they haven't yet had to give up their lives for what they believe. And I guess we probably don't hear many sermons about it, but the Bible is very clear. The Bible warns us that followers of Jesus will suffer because of their faith. You know, that's not a popular message, but it is one that's in there in the Bible, that believers will suffer because of their faith. And just to maybe ground that for us a bit, I just want to give you a tiny example of that, because we are very blessed. You know, at the moment in our country, we're not likely to be sent to prison. We're not likely to have our property confiscated because of what we believe. We're not likely to be put to death. But we know from the Fast to Feed Sundays that we have that for some Christians around the world, that is their lived experience. Because of their faith, they're suffering in that way. So this example that I'm going to give you in contrast is nothing. So I can remember, again, quite clearly, I was near one of our secondary schools in town, and there were some lads who, I don't know, they were old enough to drive, so whether they were still at school, I don't know, but they were in the car with their windows open, and as I approached, I heard one say to the other, "Oh, there's that God bloke." And my initial reaction to that was, "That's fantastic, you know? If that's what you want to call me, then that's great." But then his mate very quickly said, "Yeah, I hate him." And there was an expletive in there which I've sort of edited out for your benefit this morning. And that really hurt, do you know what I mean? I sort of went from there to there in just a moment. But that's just a trivial example, really, of the fact that when we believe, you know, we can expect opposition, we can expect hardship because of what we believe. And I just want to add a sort of counterbalance to that, just want to add a warning. That doesn't mean that we should go out there trying to provoke people to oppose us. You know, being really foolish and controversial and in your face and that sort of thing. Because that's not what the Bible's getting at all. And you know this verse from Romans 12:8, which says, "If at all possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone." So we shouldn't be provoking opposition. But the Bible warns us that if we love Jesus, if we're followers of Jesus, we can expect opposition. We can expect hardship. We can expect suffering. And you may have noticed, if you were looking at it in your Bibles, that in the Hebrews passage we just looked at, verses 5 and 6, quote, what's introduced as a word of encouragement. And it's actually from Proverbs. So it's from Proverbs 3, 11 and 12. But the way that it's quoted in Hebrews is like this. "My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son." So I had a look to see what some of the, you know, brains were saying about this. And in his commentary on Hebrews, actually that writing's a bit small, a man called Raymond Brown, a commentator called Raymond Brown, said this, and I thought this was really helpful. He said, "Some Christians may well be in danger of ignoring or dismissing the fact that God's sovereign hand is at work as much through life's adversities as in its joys and pleasures." He may well, and he means God may well be saying something extremely important to us through our troubles that we could not or would not easily receive if everything went well for us at all times. It's hard to hear, isn't it? But I think it's really important. And he goes on to exhort us, to give us an exhortation. And his exhortation is, "Be ready to go through any experience if only it will make us more like Christ in the end." So he's kind of suggesting that that's the yardstick. Is this going to make me more like Jesus? Okay, I might not like it, but I'm going to submit to it because of the goal, because of the end game, because of what it's going to do, because of where I'm going to end up. And I know, as I look around, because I know a little bit about your lives, I know that some of you are much better acquainted with suffering and hardship than I am. But it seems to me that when we suffer, we can be tempted to ask, you know, why has God done this to me? And to make that our focus. But it seems to me that perhaps a better question to ask, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't vent, you know, I think God can cope when we let those kinds of things out. But I think that perhaps a better question to ask is, what might this situation create in me? What might this situation change in me? What might God want to do through this situation in me to make me more like Jesus? You know, to fit me for heaven, if you remember that old hymn. And most of you will be familiar with C.S. Lewis. academic author, wrote the Narnia Chronicles and that sort of thing. And I love the way this sometimes happens when you're preparing to speak. I heard this, I think, on Radio 4 this week as part of Thought for the Day. But C.S. Lewis said this: God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our consciences, but shouts in our pain. And just to give that some context, you're thinking, what's this got to do with Mothering Sunday, Steve? But just to give that some context, a good mother doesn't discipline her children out of spite. You know, it's not because she hates them. On the contrary, it's out of love. Because she wants that child to become mature. She wants that child to fulfill their promise. She wants that child to maximize their potential. And that's why she administers discipline and training. I think I've told you before that if you can have a favourite theologian, that's a bit nerdy, isn't it? But my favourite theologian is a guy called Millard J. Erickson. And he said this: discipline may not be pleasant at the moment of application, but it is beneficial in the long term. It is to be remembered that love is concern and action for the ultimate welfare of another. Therefore, discipline should be thought of as evidence of love. And we go back to the Bible again, which is where we should always go. Romans 5, 3 through 5, kind of talks to us about how discipline works. You know, these days, this would be a flow diagram, if you know what they are. But it says this: so we glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. And hope does not put us to shame. I think some versions say, and hope does not disappoint. Because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. And I think having said all that, it's really important to say that like a good mother, God does not condemn us. The Bible is really clear about that. God does not condemn us. But on the contrary, he says, come to me and I will give you rest. Okay, that's all the broccoli out of the way. So we're going to think now. You might like broccoli, I do. But, you know, just substitute something that you don't like. We're going to think now about God as our comforter and God being mother-like in that sense of providing comfort to us. I think sometimes people who oppose the Christian faith want to set up a false kind of contradiction between the Old Testament and the New Testament, whereas I think that they're a continuous story revealing the character of God. And the reason that I mention that is that both the Old Testament and the New Testament talk about the comfort of God. They talk about God as a comforter. And so this verse in Isaiah is marvelous. This is Isaiah 66:13, where God says, as a mother comforts her child, so will I comfort you. You know, that's God describing himself in those motherly terms, in those mother-like terms. And in 2 Corinthians 1, 3 through 4, that's hard to say, it says, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles. Remember what we were saying a moment ago? Who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. And obviously we're focusing on the comfort today, but don't miss there that whole, what we might call these days, that whole kind of pay it forward principle. So what it's saying there is if you know any comfort from God, then that puts you in a better position to comfort others. You know, to weep when they weep and to rejoice when they rejoice. And again, just to give you some context, because we've moved from Hebrews to Corinthians, 2 Corinthians was written to Greek Christians rather than to Hebrew Jewish Christians. And this would have been quite a shock to people who had been brought up in Greek society, in Greek culture, because the gods of the Greeks were perceived to be above all that. The gods of the Greeks were perceived to be indifferent to how human beings were feeling, indifferent to their pains and their troubles and that sort of thing. And here comes Paul with this amazing message that says, no, your God is not indifferent. He's a comforter. He's God of all comfort and all compassion when you're in trouble. And so that would have hopefully been a good shock for them, you know, a good surprise. And again, just a couple of examples of this from our own life. So it seems to me that even when we're adults, we still know about that comfort that comes from being with our mothers, you know? So some of you have made a very long trip to see your mum. And Hannah, sorry to embarrass you, but Hannah's come back from university just for Easter. And you can imagine, you know, that student who's coming home with their bags of washing, you know, for the home comforts, for the home-cooked meal, for the washing basket that empties itself and the clothes that appear in the wardrobe, you know. So, but you know what I mean, don't you? We're coming home to that place where we're comfortable, to that place where we're accepted. And even more than that, I think we can all recognise the image of a small child, you know. So if you see a small child maybe trip or stumble, they graze their knee or their hand or whatever, what's their first reaction? Their first reaction, isn't it, is to look around for their mum, to go to their mum, you know, to seek that soothing, that comfort, that cuddle, that cooch. That's a Welsh word. My mum and dad are Welsh. But you know, to go to the embrace of their mother in order to be comforted by them. And God comforts us by his presence. You know, just like that mum we were just thinking about then, he holds us close to him in his everlasting arms. And that's the best source of comfort, isn't it? The best source of soothing. And finally, I just want to think about protection today, about God being motherlike in the way that he protects us. So, you might recognize these words of Jesus. So this is Jesus towards the end of his life lamenting over Jerusalem. So looking with sorrow on Jerusalem. And he borrows an image actually from the Psalms. So he says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. But you were not willing. And I saw this lovely picture on the internet. But what an image that is, isn't it? I think I counted four chicks, I think, under that hen's wings. But what an image that is of selfless protection. You know, it's the mother hen saying, you want to get to these chicks? You've got to come through me first. You know, what an image it is. And again, the Psalms. So again, we've got New Testament, we've got Old Testament. The Psalms, again, convey the same idea. Talking about God, it says he will cover you with his feathers and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and your rampart. And we'll just look at that picture again as we think about the mother-like qualities of God. So I'm going to finish up. I've just got one more thing to say. And then it's good to respond. So Tom and Nicola are going to come back. They're going to lead us in a little bit more worship, which will end our time together this morning. But just to finish up with this. Apparently, a mother who had 12 children, I know, a mother who had 12 children was once asked which one she loved the most. Okay. This reply, I think, is really clever. She apparently said, the one who is sick until they are well. The one who is away until they're back home. And in a sense, I want to encourage you this morning, and I know this logically is not possible, that each of us is God's favourite. And by that I mean that I believe that God always loves us in the way that we need.